Part 5. The Unknown. To live without hope is to cease to live. Fyodor Dostoevsky. T-minus 32. RMXT Studio Number 1, Manhattan, New York. As oblivious as the rest of the world to what was currently going on in China, Marion de Klerk addressed her tens of millions of viewers once again as Focus 2020's theme tune faded out and the clock started ticking on the night's first 20-minute segment. "We are coming to you live tonight," Marion said, "and as is always the case for our special live broadcasts, that means a shorter 45-minute format with just one commercial break between our segments. There is no doubt where we're going to start tonight, and that's with what recent events at the UN and on the streets of Buenos Aires mean for interplanetary cooperation going forward." Clark stared directly and borderline aggressively at Jan Geller, making no attempt to hide his hatred. "There will be no strict division in topics given how linked and how important various elements of these messenger-related issues are," Marion de Klerk continued. "And I'll allow our discussions to flow and develop naturally. With that said, in the second 20-minute segment, I would very much like to make the most of Billy Kendrick's presence to discuss his controversial recent archaeological activities and what they might mean for his fantastical theories on human history and ancient alien visitation."
"I sure do take issue with some of those adjectives, Marion," Billy replied with a grin. Although disappointed that de Klerk and her writers had seemingly opted to present him in the dismissive way they had when he first posited his views regarding extraterrestrials on the show many years ago, rather than in the friendlier way they'd treated him on more recent appearances, he knew better than to appear defensive. "But we'll get to that later.
And since we're lucky enough to be joined for the first time in a long time by Timo Fiori," Marion smiled, "we'll hopefully get some insight into any recent developments and future plans at Fiori Frontieri, once considered the great new hope of space exploration and research."
"Thank you for having me," Timo replied with a polite smile. "And since you're in control of the agenda, Marion, if you truly want to discuss Fiori Frontieri, then I'm sure we will."
"No one wants to discuss Fiori Frontieri,"
Jan Geller interjected in a manner that everyone expected to see a lot more of as the night wore on.
"You have Emma McCarthy and Clark McCarthy for 40 minutes, Marion. Get to the point. Get to the questions about the brutal murder their friendly little alien buddy committed yesterday."
"If I may," Emma interjected. "And from Birchwood, Colorado, Emma McCarthy joins us now." Marion beamed, holding a hand towards the huge in-studio screen which relayed Emma's video feed. Jan Geller rolled her eyes like a petulant child, fully aware she was caught doing so.
"No one is happy about what happened," Emma began. "But words like murder achieve nothing except whipping up hysteria and viewing figures for the ambulance chasers of the media world, like my fellow panelist, Ms. Geller."
"What about brutal slaying?" Jan pushed. "You can argue semantics about what is and isn't murder all day long, but the world knows what it saw. Are you happy to call it a brutal slaying?"
Emma's expression didn't crack. She was on autopilot by now, running on the muscle memory of containing a controversial bull in a china shop like Geller. As it went, Emma didn't merely have a plethora of experience in dealing with the Jan Gellers of the world. Much of her time in PR had involved coaching clients to deal with them too. The core techniques varied depending on the motivation of the obstructive and obstinate adversary, and in a black-and-white situation like this, where bad faith didn't even have to be assumed, all that mattered was avoiding falling into the countless linguistic traps being laid. This wasn't a discussion, it wasn't a debate, and it wasn't even an argument. There would be no common ground because Jan didn't want any. She would continually move the goalposts whenever necessary and wanted nothing other than to drag Emma down and get some sound bites across to the biggest live audience she would likely ever have access to. Emma knew better than to think she was talking to Jan, when in reality she was here to talk to the world while avoiding Jan's traps and ideally harnessing some of her rage and hyperbole. Dealing with this in public was like judo. As Emma had told more than a few clients over the years,
in that the energy of an irresponsible adversary could be decisively leveraged against them when they rushed forward too readily. Avoiding body blows in the meantime was the other part of the Jan surviving equation, and Emma liked to think herself particularly adept at this.
"As I said, Jan," she calmly replied after a very brief moment of thought, "the only person who seems to be happy about any of this is you. You came here to take cheap shots and score points. I came here to have a grown-up discussion about the messengers and our species' ongoing relationship with theirs."
In the studio, Marion de Klerk held a firm hand towards Jan to call for quiet, then turned towards her final guest.
"Last but not least, we're also joined once again today by Joe Crabb, a man who will need no introduction to regular viewers. From his close links to the disgraced Richard Walker during the IDA,
"Just don't," Crabb butted in furiously. "Give the late Richard Walker some of the respect he deserves, won't you? And I'll tell you this, if he was here, we wouldn't be in this whole damn mess. I get the feeling that you're not going to hand over to me very often tonight, so I'm just going to say a few things right now, if you don't mind too much."
Marion, somewhat taken aback by the strength of Crabb's opening remarks despite her bountiful experience of his temper, held out a hand of encouragement. It was true that Crabb was likely to get less speaking time than the other panelists, largely due to the relative rarity of their public appearances, but also because the lines between them were so clearly defined, while she expected his own position to fall somewhere in the middle, and the easiest time to shoehorn him in was now.
"The alien didn't need to kill the shooter," Crabb said, stating his piece. "But he did, and I'm not going to sit here and criticize him for it. If someone tries to kill you and you let them go, you deserve what's coming if they come back when your back is turned. On the broader issue, we're well rid of the eurocratic vetoes at the UN, but we're still far too tied to China and to Godfrey. We should be cooperating with New Kerguelen, and we should have Dan McCarthy as the figurehead of that cooperation, but the we in question should be the United States of America."
Marion de Klerk fired a question back at him. "So you believe we, be that the ICA or the USA, should dive headfirst into cooperative research and development projects involving things like cosmic weaponry and telepathic powers? Do you believe, for instance, that the kind of power we saw come from Leisha's hand yesterday should one day be in the hands of our police officers and our military?" Crabb, with no platform to defend and nothing much to lose from any PR misstep, shrugged his shoulders nonchalantly.
"If a power exists, I want to be the one wielding it," he said. "My country, my race, and I don't mean race like that. I mean extraterrestrial race versus human race. If a power exists, we have to have it. It's the same as the old arguments about nuclear weapons, and I think in the same terms. It's like a child playing hide and seek. Eventually, they realize that closing their eyes doesn't make them invisible. Until and unless we have the maximum attainable level of power at our disposal, we are children in an adult's game. In washing our hands of the possibilities and clutching our pearls over these uplift powers, we are simply closing our eyes and hoping no one sees us."
"Thank you, Joe, for those many thought-provoking points," Marion said.
"Before we move on," Jan jumped back in, "I just want to say that in an ideal world, this monster would be tried as the murderer it is. Clark McCarthy would be tried for obstruction of justice for encouraging it to flee rather than detaining it like a braver man would have done, and William Godfrey would be tried for incitement of violence for the frenzied anti-media hatred he has whipped up in recent weeks. Make no mistake, that journalist's blood is on their hands."
"Clark," Marion prodded, "your response?" He stared ever more intently at Jan.
"That doesn't deserve a response."
"It's a discussion show, idiot,"
Jan retorted. Clark couldn't help but laugh.
"Funny, is it?" Jan scoffed. "A human being brutally slain on his own planet by an alien monster. Millions of poor little children around the world cowering behind their parents as their televisions relayed its venomous expression. Marion, do we have the footage? Can we roll the footage to ask this oaf which part is so funny?"
"Time is tight, and we've all seen the footage," Marion said. Jan shook her head in remarkably well-acted disgust.
"You can twist the narrative all you want, but you can't censor reality. People know what happened and they know it's not funny."
"And I think they all know I was only laughing at you, idiot," Clark said,
somewhat keeping his cool and delivering what he thought was a pretty good zinger.
If we can please keep the personal comments to a minimum, Marion de Klerk said in a firm tone, not quite admonishing Jan and Clark, but certainly reminding them she was there.
And Clark, moving on, would you care to respond specifically to the issue of Leisha killing an assailant who was already safely detained? I understand it must be difficult for you to talk about this, given how close you were to the incident and how fresh it all is. We also know these are your first public comments since it happened, so we appreciate you being with us.
Clark gave a half nod of acknowledgement. He recalled the one word Emma had told him to bear in mind at any difficult question. Sandwich. This reminded him to address the question fairly directly, but not at the beginning or end of his response. That way, he took the sting out of the question at first and ensured it was less likely to be followed up on at the end.
I appreciate the opportunity to be here, he said. I'm used to watching Dan and Emma on these things, you know, and Billy. I'm excited to move on to talking about Billy's work in Turkey, but I do get why everyone wants to hear my thoughts on Leisha. Basically, Joe is right. If someone tries to kill you, they've made their bed. We can sit here and pore over every little detail, but Leisha saved my life, and those force fields aren't effortless for him to create. It's not like he could hold the guy up there in the air all day. The guy was armed and had just shown himself willing to kill. I'd be dead if it wasn't for Leisha, and so would Godfrey. If you think there's hysteria over what Leisha did, imagine if the two of us had been assassinated. Geller would be sipping champagne and crying crocodile tears, sure, but everyone else would be asking why Leisha didn't do something about it. I'm glad Leisha intervened, and I hope, when I told him to go, he didn't think I meant for good. I wanted him to be safe, in case there was another lunatic in that crowd, whipped up into a murderous rage by every Jan Geller in the irresponsible corporate media.
Jan? Marion invited. On the screen behind her, Emma nodded approvingly at Clark's words.
Answer the question, Jan demanded, unimpressed by his attempt at sandwiching. Why did Leisha kill a helplessly detained individual, and why are you defending him?
Billy Kendrick cleared his throat and jumped in.
What's with this air quotes business, Geller? Leisha is the name he's known by amongst his kind, and he is a male alien from a sexually dimorphic race that is remarkably similar to our own, despite the almost unfathomable distance between our planets. A distance, by the way, which they are able to traverse with a remarkable and physics-breaking speed. That dimorphism is one of the few things we know about their species, despite their absolute willingness to engage in scientific cooperation and an interplanetary information exchange, which could forward our understanding of the universe more in 1 year than our species has managed on its own in the past million. But the year since Dan and Tara walked on New Kerguelen has been wasted by political wrangling. Aside from the likes of you, who would rather stay in the Dark Ages than embrace a harmonious future full of progress in areas we don't even know exist, humanity is ready for cooperation.
Jan shrugged theatrically. No one has turned in to hear from Bigfoot, Billy, so yeah. Clark, I'm not going to let this one slide. Why are you defending what Leisha did? Why do you insist on being an apologist for this brutality?
He's already addressed that, Emma replied on Clark's behalf. Can you actually hear anything over the sound of your own voice?
Turning to face the screen with rage in her eyes, as though Emma was really there to see it, Jan Geller then exploded into fury. Her volume and intensity rose in unison, combining to create a fervor that sounded positively violent.
Says you, she yelled. Sitting there in Birchwood, surrounded by Secret Service agents. Oh, you don't want to leave your daughter for a few days. You don't want to bring her to New York. Well, guess what? The rest of us don't have the luxuries that come with marrying into money and power like you did. The rest of the children in this world aren't cocooned in an ivory tower. They are cowering behind their parents and asking why the alien is turning the man to mush. That is reality, Emma. And just because you're divorced from it doesn't mean the rest of us aren't faced with it. Just because Piper...
No,
Clark boomed, thumping the glass desk in front of him with a firmer fist than he intended.
Don't you dare say her name.
As Jan held Clark's eyes, her posture relaxed as though an apology was coming.
Instead, she grinned.
Piper, Piper, Piper.
Clark pushed his chair backwards, scraping it noisily across the floor, and jumped to his feet. Timo and Billy, both between him and Jan, rose at the same time to block his path. Timo, closest of all, mouthed, "This is what she wants," and put a hand on Clark's chest. Jan turned to Marion de Klerk, throwing her hands in the air.
"I won't tolerate this kind of intimidation. This is supposed to be a civilized discussion, and you're doing nothing to keep your guests in line."
Done with de Klerk, Jan then turned to the main camera and pointed to Clark.
"And this tells us everything. Physical intimidation, reactionary violence, you name it. No wonder he is defending the monster when he's willing to attack a woman."
As Emma began to talk, Clark raised a finger towards the screen to ask her for a moment. He then pointed it directly at Geller.
"No, this tells us everything. This is why you don't understand what Leisha did or what Crab said about decisively dealing with someone who tries to kill you, because you've never faced any real consequences for anything. How many times have you been punched in the face?"
Jan scoffed, rolling her eyes.
"Exactly," Clark said. "You can talk all the crap you want because you've always got that shield. Tell me this one. How many bodies have you picked off the street? How many people have you seen blown up who weren't on the other side of a TV camera? This is the whole point. You don't understand violent force because you've never had to understand it. People like me fight and die in the wars that people like you whip up with the sensationalist, divisive garbage you spew every chance you get. I've seen my friends, men and women, die deaths you can't imagine. So don't you dare sit there with that smug face and act like this is a game."
"This is the furthest thing from a game,"
Jan yelled, switching right back to her remarkably intense tone.
"You and Emma and all of your hangers-on can baselessly accuse us of whipping up murderous fear all you want, but I don't have to accuse anyone of anything. All I have to do is point to the footage of a ferocious alien monster murdering a human who was already detained. And before I get cut off from the important point, I see your hand, de Klerk. I'm going to close this chapter by saying Leisha did what he did for a very simple reason. Even if he had to kill, which he did not have to kill like that. The explosive destruction of that human body was a disgusting sight, and that monster imposed it upon us for a reason."
Jan stood up, addressing the camera as though it was a live crowd and gesturing passionately towards it.
"The timing wasn't an accident either," she went on, louder and more forceful than ever, "because at the precise time when Dan McCarthy and William Godfrey have broken away from inconvenient things like international consensus and political checks and balances, the messengers just sent us their clearest and most intimidating message of all. That message is that we have two choices: cooperate on their terms, which is to say consenting to the subjugation and effective enslavement of humanity, or face bloody, gruesome, heartless violence. That is who they are, and that is what we are dealing with. It's a warning, and it's a precedent. After all, they've done it once."
As Jan sat down and exhaled deeply, Timo and Billy shared a look of deep consternation.
"For once, you're right,"
Emma said, filling a brief silence, which Marion de Klerk had been set to take as a sign that it was time to move the conversation along.
"They have done this once, ever. And in theory, yeah, of course they could do it again. But guess what, Jan? They could have done it 7 billion times already, and they haven't. That's the point. And your hysteria doesn't change it."
"Apologist," Jan said, desperately and transparently insistent upon getting the final word in.
"I thank everyone for their input on this topic,"
Marion de Klerk said, her tone very definitely ending the conversation on Leisha's actions in Buenos Aires. "It was without question the pressing issue of the day, but it's by no means the only one. Given the events just around the corner at the UN earlier this week, this live episode was already scheduled to discuss the future of our relationship long before yesterday's events. That was why all of you were already scheduled to join us, apart from Clark, who kindly joined at short notice, and I'd like to hand over to you first, Timo, as we begin our discussion of what future cooperation should look like, if indeed you think it's something we should be aiming for.
We have a few minutes before the break, at which point I'll bring Billy and Emma in.
It is, the charismatic billionaire replied, his voice smooth and mildly accented. It has to be. You speak of the UN, Marion, and while I wasn't overly keen with the notion of a breakaway, and particularly with William Godfrey's position of authority at the new ICA, Unica quite simply wasn't working. Others have made the point better than I ever could, but on issues such as clean energy sources and even interstellar travel, politics has gotten in the way of progress for far too long. The way Dan and Tara were treated last week was a disgrace, given all they've done, and especially given the remarkable risk they took last year in willingly becoming the first humans to travel to an utterly uncharted alien world. They gained nothing from that. Behind Timo, Emma's face appeared calm, if slightly pensive, having expected Timo to be broadly on her side, but not to go out of his way to defend the family like this. In the past 3 years or so, he continued, Dan's friends and family have had to give up any notion of a normal life, while Dan himself has been thrust into an impossible position. He wants to cooperate, the messengers want to cooperate, and most of humanity wants to cooperate, but political obstacles have littered the path. And for some reason, he and Tara bore the brunt of that when protesters, whipped into a frenzy by people like Jan Geller, attempted to throw eggs at them and drop paint on their heads. Leisha protected them, and at that moment, we could never have envisioned that eggs and paint aimed at Dan and Tara would become bullets aimed at Clark just a few days later. That is where irresponsible reporting gets us, and I count myself as one of Dan's friends. I have known these people since before disclosure. Dan and Clark were sleeping in my villa while President Slater was raiding their house. That's how far back we go. I was sitting beside Emma in Colorado Springs when a bomb almost killed us both. I've spent time with Tara, Henry, their neighbors. These are good, honest people who deserve better than they're getting. And I mentioned the bomb in Colorado Springs, but since the last thing I want to do is cast aspersions, all I'll say is that while the organization of anti-alien terrorists who planted it may be gone in name, it's not hard to see who has picked up their mantle of opposing progress. Facing Timo's accusing stare, Jan Geller rolled her eyes once again.
Stick with us, Marion de Klerk chimed in, because after a few short commercial messages, we'll be diving right into a discussion on perhaps the most controversial element of future contact, aside from the uplift powers. I speak, of course, of Elder Revival. Behind de Klerk, Emma nodded on the giant screen. Elder Revival was the real nitty-gritty, a harder sell than cooperation as a general concept, but something that struck her as the most promising single route to saving her daughter from life as a feared and shunned outsider, or worse. We'll also hear about Timo's plans for future research, Marion went on, and from Billy Kendrick on the explosive rumors surrounding his recent work in Turkey. Joe Crabb will have his say, and Emma McCarthy and Jan Geller are sure to lock horns again when Focus 2020 returns. The red light on the main camera blinked off, leading to deep exhales from most of the panelists. All around the world, people were transfixed on the A-list panel engaged in highly consequential alien-related discussions under the lights of a New York TV studio. But unbeknownst to all of them, an even more consequential story was currently unfolding elsewhere.